Hello, everyone. Lovely to see you.
Great. So we have a fair bit to cover today. So let's get moving, because we're about to get to the well-known and often misunderstood story of Honey. So that'll be fun. But before we get there, there was one more thing I wanted to say about this Mishnah. So this Mishnah, we sort of did it quickly last time. Al Eilu Matirin B'Shabbat. These are the things that you can sound a blast on Shabbat. The Mishnah never tells you that you can't normally set fasts or blow shofars on Shabbat for these reasons. Doesn't tell you that, other than this line. This is the only thing of just saying, oh, here are the exceptions to the general rule, which it assumes you know, which is that you shouldn't be doing these kind of fasts on Shabbat. Al ir shehikifua goyim onahar va'al hasfina hamitarefet bayam. These cases with immediate consequences, a siege that's happening right now, doesn't have to be specifically non-Jews, it could be just troops, any army, but that's the sort of standard, the most likely scenario, that it's a non-Jewish army. Or a river is overflowing its banks and going to flood a city, a town, or the ship is drowning in the sea. Those are the situations where you would blow the shofar on Shabbat. Now, this word matri'in, this is really where the word matri'in and its ambiguity comes to the fore, which is, it's not clear what it means here. It could mean to shout, it could mean to blow the shofar, or it could mean to do all the fasting with the blowing the shofar, the last seven. And actually here is where commentators variously split on this. So the Gemara understands this to mean, you can't shout on Shabbat. These shout by adding in the special prayer for fast days, Anenu. And so that's what this is talking about. And the only argument here is about the adding in the Anenu paragraph in the Amidah, because obviously everyone agrees that it's impossible to blow a shofar on Shabbat. So that's how the Gemara understands it. And therefore a lot of other commentators as well understand it too. Or it could be just blowing the shofar by itself. And they're not talking about the fasting in general. They're just talking about literally blowing the shofar and not the rest of the apparatus of fasting. Or it could be the whole shebang. You can even start the fast on Shabbat for these things, which is how Maimonides understands this Mishnah. So there are actually a whole bunch of ways one could understand this, depending on your like prior assumptions about what you are allowed or not to do on Shabbat. So I just wanted to raise that, that this Mishnah becomes the site of really where this ambiguity in matri'in really comes to the fore and changes your entire interpretation. Okay, matri'in's ambiguity is also going to come up here. So now we have the story of Choni. The story has several versions. The version that many people are familiar with is the one in the Talmud, which is not the same exactly as you'll find in the Mishnah. So I'll point out one of the major difference here. Al kol tzara shelo tavo al hatzibor matri'in aleha chutz merov gishamim. This is the introduction to the Honey story. It seems to be totally related to the previous Mishnah about matri'in. They're all on any kind of trouble that that God forbid should it fall on the community. This sort of weird locution is just to say you don't want to say specifically that trouble will come on the community. You'd rather say in trouble, let it not come onto the community, which is essentially what we're trying to say. We're just being sort of pious about it, not trying to tempt fate around it. Matri'in alehen, they matri'in, they complain, they shout, they I've seen this translated very often as complain when people talk about the story of Honey, which doesn't make any sense in the context, because clearly matri'in means here something like blow the shofar, say the Anenu paragraph, or fast, do the whole fasting shebang. So, fine. Chutz mirov gashamim, except for a case of too much rain. And that's the hook for the Honey story. Maase, this happened. She'amru lo l'choni ha-magel. They said to Choni ha-magel. Now, I'm sure many of you have learned the word magel to mean a circle maker. That's not what it means. It's definitely a pun around the word circle, which we're about to see later, which is aguga. So certainly there's an assonance there, and it's a pun with circle. But a magel is actually just a normal profession. It's a roofer. It's somebody who fixes roofs. The reason is, and the connection between that and the circle, is that the tool you use to plaster roofs is a wheel. You can look this up in dictionaries. The Margel is like, it's mentioned elsewhere in the Mishnah, in Mishnah Makot, where it talks about what happens if your Margel, the tool that the Margel uses, what happens if the Margel falls off a roof and kills somebody? Do you have to go to the city of refuge? That's the context in the laws of manslaughter. Honi is just, this is just his profession. He's a roofer. He goes around fixing roofs. That's what he does with his life. And to do so, he has this sort of wheel-like contraption attachments. You have some of the string, and you have it attached to this sort of rolling pin, and you roll it across the roof in order to plaster the roof. Why does it matter that he's a roofer? Well, his career prospects are actually directly related to rain, in the sense that if there's a lot of rain, you might have more business or less business. Less business in the immediate future because it's raining, you can't fix roofs while it's raining, and more business in the longer term, maybe there's some roofs are damaged in the process and he has to come and fix them. So his personal, this seems to be similar to what we talked about with the Shliach Tzibor earlier, the prayer leader who has to sort of have a personal stake in the fasting, that his house is empty, but he has children to feed. So so you want somebody who has a personal stake in whether it rains or not. So to hear it's somebody who has a personal stake in whether it rains. So they came to him. It's not clear why they came to him. They did. Maybe they figured that he would be answered. Don't know. Maybe he's famous for doing this in the past. Also don't know. All we have here is they just came to Honi HaMargel. They said to him, pray for us that there should be rain, that rain should fall. So he says to them, Amar lahem, tzu v'hichnisu tanarei fsachim b'shvil shelo yamuku. That sounds good. I'll do it. Go and now take in your Pesach ovens in order that they don't disintegrate. So the setting seems to be Nisan. The point is that you have ovens set up to cook your Pesachs. People have set that up already, so it's Nisan. It's very, very late in the season. Big, big problem for the crops. If it rains when the clay ovens are still outside, those clay ovens will disintegrate. So he is so certain that the rain is going to come. He said, I've got this 100%. I'm telling you right now, what you have to do is take your ovens in so they don't get ruined. Do it right now, because guaranteed rain will come. Okay. Oh yeah, the other thing I was going to say is that I finally managed to, with Ruben's help, work out how to do a poll. So we're going to have a poll at the end of this, of the story. So pay attention of who you think the hero of the story is. And then we can talk about why. Okay. Hitpalel v'lo yardu gashamim. But then he started praying and the rain didn't fall. Masa, what did he do? Ag ugav amad b'tocha. He made a circle, and this is the pun back with Margel, and stood inside it. V'amar lefanav, and he said before God, Ribono shel Olam, Master of the World, Banecha samu fnei hemalai she'ani chaven bayit lefanecha. Your children are putting their faces upon you, for I am a household servant before you, a ben bayit. Ben bayit is like some kind of steward of the house, somebody who helps run the house's functions, butler or something like that, or some kind of slave. So they're saying, look, I'm just a ben bayit here. I'm just trying to intercede on behalf of your children, Israel, and I'm just trying to help get them what they need. Nishba ani v'shimcha ha'gadol she'ini zaz mikan ad she'trachim al banecha. I swear on your great name that I will not move from here, from this circle, until you have mercy on your children. So it's a big gambit. If God doesn't listen to him, he's kind of a bit screwed in this. But luckily, hitchilu gashamim menatfin. It starts to rain little bits, like drops, sort of a bit of drops. It starts to drizzle. Amar lo kach sha'alti. Honi said, this is not what I asked for. Ela gishmei vorot shichin umarot. Rather, I wanted rain for the cisterns, for the caves and the pits, all the various reservoirs. I want waters. We saw this in an earlier Mishnah, that the right kind of rain is rain which allows you to fill all of the reservoirs, earlier in chapter 3. So that's the rain I asked for. Obviously, when I said rain, I didn't mean drizzle. I meant actual rain that we can use. Hichilu leireid bezaf. It started to rain in a storm. rain extremely heavily. Amar, lo kach sha'alti, ela gishmei ratzon bracha undava. This is not what I asked for either. All I wanted was rain, which is for good rain. Ratzon is willing. Rain we asked for, blessing and nedava, and gift. We just wanted good rain. That's what I asked for. When I said rain, obviously I didn't mean not enough rain. I didn't mean too much rain. I meant just good rain. Yardu chetiknan. And then it fell according to what he decreed. Yes, so it is a bit like the quail scenario, Sarah. Yes, right. There's also there's a weird sort of Goldilocks thing going on over here as well, which is like, oh, that's just right. But also it's not clear that actually the rain is just right just because what's about to happen. So it fell just as tiknan, as it was decreed, as it should, like the right amount of rain. But actually, there's so much rain. So it doesn't seem to be that it was the right amount of rain. There was actually so much that they had to leave the lower levels of Jerusalem and all go up to the Temple Mount, where so basically the whole of Jerusalem was starting to flood because of the rain. So it's not at all clear that actually the rain fell that was bracha and dava. It seems like maybe that's not the case, but maybe that's the amount of rain they needed, but still, it's unclear. Ba'uva amrulo, they came and said to Choni, "Hashem shehit balot aleihem sheyerdu kach hit palel sheyelchu lahem." Okay, great. You prayed on our behalf that the rain should fall. Now, please pray for us that the rain should go away. It's too much rain. We've had enough. Please take it away from us. This is what links back to the opening line of too much rain. Amar lahen, he replies back to them, "Tzu or u im nimchit evan hatoyin." This is a bit of an odd response. He says, "Go and see if the evan hatoyim," which is some place high up in the temple, it's not totally obvious what this is. What he seems to be saying is, it's not too much rain unless this high place, the evan hatoyim, the rock of claiming, is covered in water. In other words, it's impossible. You can't have that much rain that the Evan HaTorin will be covered in water and be totally submerged. So therefore, I'm not going to pray for the rain to go away because it's not too much rain. Now, not clear whether what he's saying is essentially, actually, I can't pray for too much rain because we have this principle that you can't pray to get rid of too much rain. You can't have a fast about it or something. So I can't complain about having too much rain, so I can't do that. Or whether he's saying, actually, if the Evan HaTorim was covered in water, I would happily pray for the rain to go. It's just that's never going to happen, or is very unlikely to happen. So it's hard to know exactly how to read what he's saying, and it's very hard to know how that links in with the principle we started with, which is about matri'in, about blowing the shofar or starting a fast. So that's the whole episode that worked out pretty well for everybody, I guess, in the end. But then there's a coda. The coda, I'm going to give it to you in two versions. I think are very, very different versions. Shalach lo Shimon ben Shatach, ilmalei choni ata gozrani alecha nidui. Shimon ben Shatach, who's a sage in this time, this now gives you the setting of when this happened, which is during the Hasmonean period. Shimon ben Shatach is known for interacting with some Hasmonean kings like Yanai, Alexander Janaeus. If you were not Choni, so Shimon ben Shatach, one sort of the person in charge of things, or one of the people in charge of things, heard about this and sent a message that seemed like he was very unhappy. Sent a message to Choni. Ilmalei Choni ata, if it weren't for the fact that you were Choni, gozrani alecha nidui, I would decree upon you an excommunication. I would excommunicate you from the community. This seems to suggest that Choni is a well-known person who is, a well-known chassid, I guess, somebody who is known for his powers to get God to do what he wants, which is, or like a popular person in the country, which is why the people came to him in the first place, presumably, is because he's famous for doing something like this. But I just want to say that that's the version in our printed editions. I'm just going to show you a slightly different version, which is in some of the manuscripts, which gives you a slightly different spin. So we're going to switch off to this. By the way, it's not at all clear, and that's why I've got this poll question at the end. It's not at all clear what Connie did wrong. If you look at this one, it's actually a very different kind of flavor. Tzarich ata lenadot. That's all he says for that line. I need to excommunicate you. I would ideally want to excommunicate you. You really need to be excommunicated, but your actions right now means that I can't. So instead of hinging on prior actions or like Honi's popularity with the people, this version assumes that this is like Honi's, you know, entry onto the stage of miracle working, but I can't excommunicate you because of how well it worked out. Like, yeah, you got everything you needed. So those are just the two sort of different ways of reading it. Just depends on whether you think that Honi is like this famous guy, popular guy, or Honi is like this, the thing he did was just this moment and nothing else before. So there you go. So it's two slightly different versions of the Mishnah. But now, what Shimon ben Chatach can't excommunicate him because of Amar Selach, what can I do for you? You are like a spoiled child. Mitchate is literally the root to sin, but in this form, it means you're like doted upon. You are just doted upon from before God, and God does your will like a son who dotes with his father, and his father does his will. Like, you got everything you asked for. Like, what am I supposed to do to you? You seem to be favored by God. I can't stop you. What am I going to do? And about you, the verse says, your father is happy and your mother, and they rejoice in your birth. Great. So the real key question is, basically, what did Honi do wrong? There's a few different versions of understanding this. So you could try and understand it such that he actually disagreed with this principle at the top of the Mishnah, that he went against this principle of not praying for too much rain. Because in fact, there was a moment where there was too much rain and he prayed to take it away, right? When the rain fell bazaf in a storm, he said, that was not the rain I asked for. So that's one possibility. He actually went against this principle in the Mishnah, depending on how you understand this principle. Another possibility is his problem was when he said, the reason why Shimon ben Chatach was not happy with him is because he said this thing over here, where he said, lo kach sha'alti. That's like a brazen way of talking to God. This wasn't what I asked for. Like, well, how can you say that to God? God gave you a thing. Like, God gave you rain from nothing. That's kind of amazing. Like, well, how are you going to turn around and say, this isn't what I asked for? That's just that's behaving like a spoiled child, as Shimon ben Chatach says at the end. Another possibility is it's this ag ugav amad betocha, and the swearing that he sort of baits God into action, that he stands in a circle, refuses to move, and says, if I don't get rain, I'm never going to move. So that's like sort of baiting God into responding in a way that God like would be shamed at a certain extent if God didn't bring the rain at that time. So maybe that's the spoiled child aspect of it. Or maybe he did nothing wrong. Like, Shimon ben Chatach is just sort of politically worried about this in the sense that, you know, there's a new miracle worker in town, which people might be drawn to with sort of charismatic personality. And that might spell trouble for the establishment of whom Shimon ben Chatach is among them. So those are all the various versions as to what could be going wrong. And there are definitely other things you could say about this Mishnah. It's very complex, very, very rich, told in a couple of different forms. Yeah, so that's good. That's another option, right? Acting on his own, it wasn't in the shul context. Right, that's another, yeah, good. That's another way you could think about this, which is the Matri Inn maybe is doing the whole apparatus that we spoke about in the first two chapters, which is to say, you know, bring the Torah out into the town square, gather all the elders, gather all the people, do the davening and the extra brachot. He didn't do any of those things. He just sort of made it up as he went along. So that could be a problem, Carla, exactly right. Proverbs came before this codified version of the Mishnah. Yes, for sure. They know the book of Proverbs. It's centuries old by the time of the Mishnah. I want to take you to the document I was just at, because there's like two really interesting things to say about it. The first thing is that the Mishnah is not the first place that Honi appears. It seems to be a fairly well-known story. You can see this document, right? Okay, great. This is Stories of the Law by Moshe Simon Shoshan. he sort of goes through the Mishnah, the various stories in the Mishnah, and talks about how they're built and so on and so forth. So he notes that actually Josephus, the historian Josephus in the first century, knows of a person called Onias, i.e. Choni in Greek, who prayed for rain and was answered. And that's the only thing he knows about him, is that just the fact that he got rain when it was hard to do so. And then he tells us a different story about Choni, which is that there was a civil war going on, and the people wanted him to pray for one side to lose. And he refused, and then was martyred. He died by the mob. The mob lynched him. The Mishnah tells it, and Josephus also knew it in some other form. There aren't many, by the way, shared traditions between the Mishnah and Josephus. It's actually pretty rare that you'll find something in Josephus that is also in the Mishnah, or I mean vice versa. Unlike the Talmud Bavli, where actually the Talmud Bavli knows a lot of the stories in Josephus. The other thing that I'm going to show you as soon as this computer starts waking up is that we talked about last week the document called Megillat Ta'anit, which is the document which lays out the days where you're forbidden to fast or to have funerals from the Second Temple period. And we talked about how there is a Hebrew commentary on the Megillat Ta'anit, which is called the Scholion. There's actually one version, there's a bunch of different versions of the Scholion, of the commentary on the Megillat Ta'anit, and the one version has Choni anchored to a particular date in Nisan, that the reason you can't fast on that particular day is because that was the day that Choni brought the rain. But that version basically knows the Talmud, and therefore it's probably not an independent version of the story. It's just not working, so I'm going to move on to back to the Mishnah. There's another version of the Scholion, where it's actually a different Shimon. It's Shimon HaTzadik, Shimon the Just, who's a Hasmonean king, who talks about rain in general as basically what a father does to his children via the Ben Bayit. So it uses the same phrase, Ben Bayit, this like royal steward. It's like the king who wants to punish his son, and therefore he orders the steward, the Ben Bayit, the butler, to not give any food or drink to his son. This like really interesting flips that metaphor around, in the sense that Shimon HaTzadik was basically saying that like the not giving rain is a punishment from God, and it's like sort of brought about by the Ben Bayit not giving us food, the butler. Choni says, I'm just a butler. I'm like trying to beseech you on behalf of your children. So in other words, in Shimon HaTzadik's version of the metaphor, the Ben Bayit is working on behalf of the father. But Choni flips that around and says that he's working on behalf of the children to beseech the father in order to get what he needs. So it's a really interesting flip of what this metaphor exactly of household servant here is. Choni is the hero because he actually brought the rain. Right, Shimon ben Shattach had no plan to get the rain. Choni clearly did. Yep, that's good. Right. Chutz was problematic, but saving lives supersedes all. Yep, very nice. So Shimon ben Shattach had a legitimate complaint against it, but at the end of the day, he saved the whole people. Choni did what the people wanted, yep. I wanted to vote for God. Great. But like the guy who put his foot into the sea of reeds, the Nachshon ben Aminadav, sometimes one needs to act. Great, Choni certainly acts. He's the kind of person you might call an ish maaseh, a man of action. Extremely close, 60% for Choni and 40% for Shimon ben Shattach. Right, there you go. The Mishnah gives Shimon ben Shattach the last word, which seems to suggest the Mishnah thinks that Shimon ben Shattach is the hero, or at least that Choni did something extremely problematic. Great. This is like one of the best stories in the whole Mishnah. I'd like for the sages to leave room for independence, like Moshe, whose response to hearing that two folks were prophesying about the camp was to wish that more people have the gift of prophecy. Right, Shimon ben Shattach is the opposite of Moshe in that way. Very nice. How do we get the story of him falling asleep by the tree? Great. So that story comes in the Talmud. This story is picked. Let me tell you the different ending. The different ending is he said that when Choni said to them, and that this is in the Talmud, he said to them, I have it as a tradition that people do not pray against an excess of bounty. Nevertheless, bring me a bullock for a Thanksgiving offering. And they did that. And then he said, Master of the universe, your people Israel, that you brought forth from Egypt, cannot endure an excess of bounty, nor an excess of tribulations. May it be your will that the rain shall cease and the world will be sated. At once the wind blew, the clouds dispersed, and the sun shone. So in the Bavli, in the Talmud Bavli, he actually does get rid of the rain after being persuaded to. But yes, and then the Talmud goes on to tell the story of him falling asleep for 70 years or whatever, and then seeing his descendants and the Beit Midrash. And he becomes sort of a rabbi. He becomes rabbinized in the Bavli. He becomes like a Torah scholar. There's no evidence at all that he knows anything about the Torah or is in any way learned. He just seems to be a sort of charismatic religious leader in that way. But the Bavli turns everyone into rabbis. That's one of the things the Talmud does. It just makes everybody into a rabbi. Yes, rabbis don't like it when common folks challenge the power structure. Yes, that's certainly seems to be true of Shimon ben Shattach. Great, try to manipulate God. Yes, that's a good question. Like, one of the things is, like, what's the difference between what he did and magic to a certain extent? Magic is also trying to bait God into action. That's one of the reasons people talk about it being to be being forbidden. Yes, people definitely manipulate God in the Torah. Yes, that's true as well. How much of what Choni did was showmanship for the people? Maybe he had an ongoing prayer for a relationship with God and he took advantage of that to pull off a trick. Yes, possible. Absolutely possible. Yeah. I mean, drama is an important part of the religious experience. So, yeah. Too much independence and community breaks down, but no rain and no community. Yeah, right, exactly. So that's the basic thing, which is like, Choni, you did the right thing, but not in the totally the right way. It was good for Shimon ben Shattach to rebuke him, but nonetheless, in the end of the day, he did the right thing. Okay, thank you everyone, that was fun. Maybe we'll find more opportunities to do polls in the future. Yeah, lots of things to be said about this story, lots of ways this is understood in the tradition, before and after. Thank you everyone, and we will see you tomorrow when we'll continue, finish chapter 3 and move on to chapter 4.